Welcome once again, and a good Monday night to all of you. Dan and Rick here with the Dan and Victory postgame podcast. As the Musketeers move to 4-0 on this young season, they defeat Murray State 89-62 at Cintas Center tonight. Rick, this was a game, the final score makes it appear to be a blowout, and it was. If you look at the score at each four-minute war, it was a blowout, and it pretty much was. But this is a game that there was a lot of incidents. There were a lot of incidents worth talking about, and I think we should start with Xavier's fast start. They got off to an 11-0 start in this game. They scored 9 points on their first five possessions. I believe the one possession where they didn't score was the play where D. Davis turned the ball over. The ball bounced right back to X and ended up as a dunk on the other end. Their first six possession, they had 11 points, and the one where they didn't score was that possession. So Xavier off to a super fast start. They defended extremely well in that first 4 minute war, 11-0 up, and they cruised from there, really. This is a team, you know, one of our guys on Twitter, Nick, who we shared a few beers with in New York during the Big East tournament last year.
And credit Nick for putting us on to the best pizza spot we ate at in New York. Where was that? What was that place called? Pizza
Supreme? Oh, my God. Yes, I think that's what it was. It was right across from Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, at Nick the Stick 88 on Twitter, by the way.
But he noticed he noted that Xavier started a lot faster this year than they did last year, and I got to agree. I think that's one thing we bemoaned last year quite a bit about Xavier was the fact that they struggled to get off the mark in so many games. In this game, they just jumped Murray State from the beginning, just as they did against Stephen F. Austin, although they gave up that lead, just as they did against Northern Arizona, and just really as they did against Long Beach State once they got out of their blocks in that game. So, I mean, what do we attribute this to? Is it just the improved offense, or is Xavier coming out with more intensity at the beginning of games?
See, that's the thing. To me, it's amazing what making shots can do for a team. And I think that's all this is, because I look at it and I remember arguing all the time on the message board last year with everyone saying, you know, Chris has got to fire this team up. Like, he needs to get technicals or yell at the team more before games or something. And like, that was the difference. They just weren't playing hard enough. And I always countered with, I disagree. I saw a lot of energy out of those guys, especially when they went on the road and everyone was talking about how they lacked energy on the road. I thought that most of the games they did come out and played hard on the defensive end, but when you can't score, it just beats you down as a team. They were sluggish all the time last year because it was such a struggle just to score the basketball. This you mentioned the ridiculous start they had on those first several possessions. I mean, they jumped out to a 9-0 lead in the first 2 minutes and 30 seconds of the game. I think they took it to 11-0 after that little brief period where we thought it was a timeout, but they're actually checking to see whether Trayvon's shot was a 2 or a 3. And really, when you put yourself in those positions, what we've seen is even when Xavier has those little slip ups where, like, the second 4 minute war, they weren't great. They gave up some transition buckets. There was a lull in the second half where they really didn't play very well at either end. You just put yourself in a position where those don't matter as much. When you've already got a 17-point lead on a team in the first half, you can go through a bad lull and give up a 6-0, 7-0 run, call a timeout, get it back together, and regroup. The other thing about this team that I think is worth noting is they've been great at answering. When other teams start to make a run or things go bad for this team, it seems like every time, whether it's a Chris Mack calling a timeout to run a set play where they get a great look, which we'll talk about more in a little bit, or it's just Trayvon stepping up and knocking down a three. I mean, it's that simple sometimes. It's just guys are making shots, but it makes all the difference in the world, at least so far.
You know, it was kind of weird against Long Beach State, guard-dominated team, Stephen F. Austin, a perimeter-oriented team that runs that motion offense, not real big, that X didn't run up very much of a rebounding advantage, although they were very good inside in both those games. This game, my goodness, Xavier 56 rebounds to Murray State's 23. I mean, I don't even know if I've ever seen that before. Xavier had 27 offensive rebounds.
After Murray having, State what, had, six last game against Murray a State, tiny team?
Murray State had 23 total rebounds in this game. Insane. It was utter domination. And I have to say that the guy out there that impressed me the most, and this is a game where Trayvon Blewett was on fire from the three, where Matt Stainbrook couldn't miss, where Remy Abel was imperious in transition, where you had Jalen Reynolds dunking everything. Sean O'Mara looked great in his cameo role. James Farr, was the guy that impressed me the most today. I thought he was absolutely could not be denied from a rebounding perspective. And we talked last year about how good he can be as both an in zone and out of zone rebounder. I thought today he just wanted it more than anybody else on the floor. I remember one play in the second half where Trayvon had stepped in, tried about a 15-foot jump shot, missed it a little bit long. And, you know, I sit behind that basket and I didn't even like all of a sudden the ball was in the hoop and I had no idea how, but James Farhad slashed in between two guys in a 23-point game with 10 minutes left and just had beaten everybody to the spot and laid in a goal. 5-11 from the field. He missed a couple bunnies, but you know, you put up what, 10 points and 14 rebounds. That's a pretty great game for a guy like him. And I thought his defensive effort was outstanding. So James Farhad was sort of my unsung hero of this game. We can talk about some of the guys whose contribution showed up more on the scoreboard, but I thought James Farhad was outstanding tonight. Yeah,
well, let's talk about James Farhad for a second, because you literally, I mean, just the last minute 30 that you spoke or whatever that was the exact sentences that were getting ready to come out of my mouth. I thought Farhad completely set the tone, and you mentioned that play in the second half, which I remember the exact one you're talking about. I'll go back to the one in the first half, his first offensive rebound of the game. I thought completely set the tone for the way he played and the way Xavier played on the offensive glass. It was one where he was on the right side of the hoop. There was a shot that hit off the heel of the rim and bounced over to the left side. He came flying across, grabbed it, and all in one motion spun and put it right back up for an easy put back. It was an athletic looking move. And that's another thing about James Farhad that I think is worth talking about, especially on the offensive end. He has now had three different times this season that I can recall, and maybe, you know, there might be another one or two that I've missed in there or just can't remember, where he has caught the ball on the perimeter, looked at a guy, maybe jab stepped him, and then driven him with three or four dribbles all the way to the rim. One or two of those he's finished, the other few he hasn't, but help defense has had to come over, and then whoever's on the opposite block has gotten an easy putback. Tonight that was Matt Stainbrook. I remember right before the season started, Xavier works out with ASAP, that company that a lot of the professional football players and everyone else, most of the athletes in this area that participate at a high level train at. They posted some picture that had, or not ASAP, Ignition rather, and James Farhad had some type of belt and he was like the champion of their workouts or whatever it is for this summer. And I think it shows. I think he has taken the conditioning, his body, all the stuff that he needed to do to get better. I think he took that extremely seriously this offseason, because he's just moving like a different guy. He's not stuck in the mud on the defensive end. He's not so rigid when he's trying to rebound out of area, and he's not so straight up and down when he's playing defense. He's more flexible. He can bend at the hips better. He can bend at the knees better. He's just a different looking player. And tonight I think we saw the James Farhad that could be, and the James Farhad that I talked about a lot in the preseason, and the guy that this team could be very special if they get on a regular basis.
Mm. And I thought, you know, you get beyond what James did. Matt Stainbrook, another outstanding game. And my dad actually made the point. Jalen Reynolds had a great game tonight. I believe he had. Yeah, I mean, he was fantastic the whole game. 12 points, 11 rebounds. He obviously, you know, when you play a team like Murray State that doesn't have that talented a big man, Jalen is always going to be the most athletic guy on the floor. The thing that I thought was really good with Jalen was his passing tonight, yep, which isn't usually a part of his game that you key in
notice
on.
Notice, yeah.
But it's
underrated, though.
Yeah, and I think that, and I made the point as my dad and I were BSing up in the stands. I'm like, well, you know, the guy spends 2 hours a day playing with Matt Stainbrook. Yep. Something's got to rub off. I mean, Stainbrook's one of the best passing big men that's come through Xavier in all the time that I've been watching. And if Jalen can add that to his game, especially with the shooters that Xavier has off the wing, I mean, all of a sudden they become almost unplayable offensively. And that's what we've seen so far. I mean, Xavier is really just boat race teams. Their points per possession is out of this world. And it's going to be interesting, obviously, to see what they do against better competition. But if you can score, you can score, you know, and that's the one thing that's been missing. Xavier's up 52-32 at halftime of this game. 2 years ago, Rick, I remember a period of about four games where Xavier didn't score 52 points in a game.
Yeah, well, and I mean, UC scored 54 or something last night
right.
against Eastern Illinois. So you're absolutely right about the if you can score, you can score thing. That doesn't really change. It's not just and it's not just scoring, right? Like because you can beat up a team in the paint and score. I mean, Xavier did score 56 points in the paint in this game. So that's one thing. But Xavier, this is the worst game they've had shooting wise, especially in the second half. They only shot 35.9% from the field and 1-for-9 from three, 57.1%, 8-of-14 from the free throw line. It wasn't a good second half offensively for them. But the difference is they make shots. They can make shots. And what that eliminates is last year where you had those 7-minute droughts and a team could just, I mean, literally either go on a run to put you out of the game or go on a run if they were behind and get right back into it or even take the lead from you because you had a 7-minute or maybe a little bit less drought where you just could not put the ball in the basket. And this year, I just don't think this team will ever have those stretches.
I want to talk about D. Davis for a minute, both in the context of this game and the Stephen F. Austin game.
Can I say one thing about Jalen real quick before we move on?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Because I thought you hit a great point on his passing, and that's something that people don't talk about a lot. I think there's two things there to look with Jalen's passing. One, he came into Xavier's program as a very unselfish kid. I don't think that's talked about enough because there was the immature side of him, the side that gets too many fouls and is a little too rambunctious and hot-headed at times when reacts to things. I don't think guys like that normally get called unselfish, but he is absolutely an unselfish teammate and a guy who is all about the team. So I think there's where it started. And then the second thing you nailed, him playing with Matt Stainbrook, he has learned a lot about passing from Matt Stainbrook. I think if nothing else, just because the same passes that Matt's looking for, that's what Jalen is now looking for. Because if nothing else, he's told to follow what Matt's doing and Matt's in there helping him each day saying, hey, look at that. You know, if you catch the ball and they double, look opposite wing or whatever it is. He's teaching him some of these things. I think you absolutely nailed that.
Before we leave that, we should probably talk about the incident in the second half with about 10 minutes left. J.P. McCura stole a ball, got a run out and was fouled really, really violently. We don't think there's a whole lot of malice in it, but it was definitely a purpose foul. J.P. was shaken up on the play and Jalen was the player that fouled him was ejected for a flagrant two. But Jalen was also ejected for leaving the bench area. Rick, can you just give a quick summary of what you learned in the postgame press conference about that incident?
Yeah, well, it is the automatic ejection rule. Chris Mack did say, and I agree from what I saw. Now, of course, you never know what a player may say that you didn't hear from over on press row or anything. But from what Chris Mack said as well, and this coincides with exactly what I saw. As soon as JP went down, basically Jalen started running off the bench to go to JP. There was no altercation. He wasn't going after any players. He took a few steps off the bench towards JP. Someone grabbed him, but the ref saw him. And it is an automatic ejection, but the rule is not, you do not get hit with a technical, and there is no suspension for the next game in this case with the ejection. So he will be playing on Thursday. Normally, I'm sure he'll come off the bench for James and play as many minutes as he always does.
Okay, so D. Davis, I wanted to talk about him a little bit in the context of both this performance and the Stephen F. Austin game. I thought there was a great take on D's performance by Brian Snow, and it made a lot of sense because what Snow said is that D basically was solid for the majority of the Stephen F. Austin game, but he made a few mistakes. And when D makes mistakes, they tend to be extravagant mistakes.
Yeah.
They almost always seem to lead to a dunk or a three on the other end. They almost always look ridiculous, and they're almost always kind of boneheaded.
The pick six, you know, if you make your mistake out at the top of the key, obviously that leads to a dunk. So that's part of it that can happen with any point guard. But is the rest of the reason just because he's small? Like, is that why he gets himself in tough situations sometimes?
Honestly, I think that's it. I think that when a 5'9 guy gets into the lane and throws up a wild shot, it looks way worse than when Trayvon blew it.
Right.
Or, you know, if you're Miles 6'4 Davis
guy,
did the same
you can
thing.
Kind of just use your size and blow it or
right.
something. Sure.
Yeah, and D has been susceptible to this. I remember that ridiculous left-handed bounce pass he tried to throw in the NC State game that made me rip a huge tuft of hair out of my scalp. But I think he's been – but I think that the less flashy D is, the better he generally is. And I think tonight he played way more within himself. He didn't rack up the gaudy assist numbers that he did against Stephen F. Austin. He had 5 tonight against, 2 turnovers. But I thought he was a lot more assured and sort of stable. And I think that showed. He seemed to just He seemed to really have command over this game and was doing a nice job, really, of feeding the ball into the post where Xavier had such a massive advantage. But yeah, I mean, D, to a certain extent, I mean, he's the quarterback of this team. He defines to a large extent how well they're going to play. And, you know, you're going to have to deal with the occasional calamity from D, because he usually is so good. I thought he got, you know, I thought this like the Long Beach game was a game where I thought he drew by far the toughest defensive assignment and acquitted himself pretty well for the most part. So I thought it was a pretty solid game for D. Davis tonight.
Oh yeah, I mean, Cameron Payne ended up with 23 points, but he took 18 shots to do it. He's a very good player, and it was not a good offensive night for him outside of the few early transition buckets he got that just drove Matt crazy because they were coming off made baskets. But I thought D was great on defense, and I thought he was really good on offense. The thing with D, somehow he's gotten into this like Andy Dalton territory with fans where.
Let's not go that far.
Well, no, I mean, but it is getting to that point in the sense that, hear me out on this, in the sense that everyone's overanalyzing his play so much to where he's never allowed to make a mistake now. Like everyone else in the nation, if they go 12-3 or 12-2 or whatever he was against Stephen F. Austin with assist to turnovers, it's an incredible performance. But with D, because, you know, those couple mistakes did look bad, and we're to this point where everyone's analyzing every mistake he makes so much that they get blown out of proportion. And guys are allowed to make mistakes and still have a good game. If D only has two mistakes the whole game, no matter how terrible they are, and don't get me wrong, I mean, the one shot he took in the second half of the Stephen F. Austin game where they're up by like 10 and you know, it's getting to the middle of the second half and you're trying to run a clock and he just dribbled down on a 1-on-3 and throws up an air ball from the left side of the lane with, you know, 20 seconds on the shot clock left. Sure, that was a horrid possession that rivals the Justin Martin pass from a couple years ago. But I think with D, I was reading the tweets, because obviously I watched that Stephen F. Austin game on tape delay. I was reading all the tweets and some of the texts I was getting, and I expected it to be so much worse. And I thought for a lot of that game, he did so many good things for that team that his four or five terrible mistakes, and they were bad, and no one's arguing that they're not, was absolutely a net positive, as someone on the board said. But I do think you have to know, and someone else made this point on the board as well, that the defense that Stephen F. Austin plays, they don't help. So what they want is, and especially against a point guard like D, where he's not the scorer on the team, what they want is is for their guy to go one-on-one with D and win that matchup defensively. They are not, when D gets into the lane, they weren't going to help and suck down on him and allow him to kick out to a shooter. They were staying on the shooter and denying that pass and trying to steal that pass. So what Chris Mack challenged D all week in practice to do was take advantage of that and beat his man one-on-one. And, you know, regardless of whether you're a senior or not and you should make better decisions, obviously that's the case. But when you get challenged like that all week and you're told you better be able to beat your guy one-on-one, you play for Xavier and he plays for Stephen F. Austin, and I mean, you're going to try to do that. You're going to take some pride in it. You're going to try to beat him. And I think that's some of what you saw there with D.
Yeah. I mean,
he was great.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was fantastic tonight.
And I did talk to Chris Mack in the post game tonight that I asked him the question, do you think that the team's different right now when the offense is different when D's running the show? And he said tonight, absolutely. And there's some things that Brandon struggles with is he just can't get them into the offense and be as comfortable and organized when people start pressuring him up around midcourt. When they sag off of him, he's fine.
X did struggle at times today with the press. I wasn't sure whether it was really a matter of X having – I feel like people are kind of nitpicking. There's been a couple things about – because X had a couple turnovers at the end of the Northern Arizona game when they were up 50 points.
Right.
You know, they had a couple – there were a couple errors against Long Beach State when Long Beach's guards, who are very good, I want to remind everyone, heated us up in that game a little bit. And then tonight, you know, there were a couple possessions where X struggled against the press, but I really am not that concerned.
I don't see struggles against the press. I see sometimes when D's out of the game, they have issues looking organized and getting into their offense. They have some just stagnant periods where guys aren't in position.
Well, even with D, a couple times today, you know, it took him 9.98 seconds to get the ball over midcourt, and then all of a sudden, you know, a couple passes to consolidate, and there's 15 on the shot clock, and they haven't even done anything yet. And that did happen a couple times today. But I think that what people are perhaps focusing on is because we're sort of conditioned and people tend to talk more about the times that things don't work than when they do. We're talking about a relatively smaller set of possessions than normal because Xavier scores almost all the time, or at least has so far this season.
Yeah, and they're playing at a faster pace, too. Yeah, that's the other thing.
That's another thing.
When you're getting 23 assists and 36 baskets, 13 turnovers aren't as bad.
Right. Yeah, 13 turnovers is really bad when you're playing a 58-possession game or something like that, when like they were, you know, at times last year, at times 2 years ago. When you're running up and down the floor the way they have been so far this season, yeah, you're going to have more turnovers, but your turnover percentage is about the same.
Right. You know? I've also seen when other teams press them, it seems like I see, yeah, okay, there's three or four bad possessions out of a half or something when that pressure picked up. But there were eight wide open looks that they got because the other team was out of position, overextending, trying to press, and they got either a dunk with their bigs at the end or a wide open three for somebody. So, I mean, it works both ways. That's just how pressure works. The other team's gambling, and if you beat them, sometimes you're going to beat them, sometimes they're going to beat you. That's just the way it is.
All right, Rick, let's move on to some quick takes, some quick fire takes here.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to throw out some random things. Some things that people sent us on Twitter, hashtag XTakes. We thank you for that.
Hashtag X Takes was a big hit in its first night.
We'll keep that going. Stanley Burrell's attire tonight, your thoughts?
If you didn't see this, the picture is on Twitter. I will make sure to retweet this after the show if I haven't already. But red pleather, is that what that was? A red pleather t-shirt?
That's a man that's been in Europe for a few years is all I can figure.
Yeah, is that what we're going with? We're just going to blame this on overseas designers? Like, that's what's hot in Japan right now? Because that's what
it was something, all right.
That caught my eye. Also, what about him wearing a red shirt to the Xavier game that he knows he's going to be walking on court to celebrate Sister Fleming? I was a little surprised by that. I was thrown off, but it's also Stanley Burrell, so...
Well, let's talk about this next. What'd you think of the Sister Rose ceremony and the bobblehead? I thought it was pretty cool.
Actually, the thing that was really neat was the video that they did at halftime with. They did a really good job of putting that together, getting interviews with guys like Brian Grant, and some really good quotes from Chris Mack about Sister. Even had a quote from Pete Gillen on there, some video from him from back in the day, although the audio was a little weak on that. It was well done. It was classy. And then, Father Graham did whatever he did at the end. So
JP Makura, what's the status on his how he came out of that that transaction we referred to earlier?
Yeah, so Mac and the teammates and everyone afterwards seemed to think he's good to go. They brought him back to the bench after checking him out initially, which, I mean, I would assume that means no concussion at all, because they wouldn't have him in that environment and the noise and the lights and everything if he did test positive for a concussion. And the other and the other thing is they said it was actually more his lower back and, that area that hit hard. And while his head did snap back and hit the ground, that wasn't what he was concerned about or complaining about. So I think he's going to be all right. He's probably going to have a heck of a bruise, and it's not going to be fun sitting on that plane tomorrow to California.
What? So JP 1-for-4 tonight from the field, missed a foul shot. I don't think he outscored his man tonight.
No. The book is definitely out on him. There's no question about that. As soon as he got in the game, I think he was guarding Justin Seymour, and that was as soon as JP was on him, he jacked up a three, and that was one of only two shots he hit the whole night, and the only three he made. He was 1-of-3 from beyond the arc. Guys know when JP's on him that it's their turn to score, so that's something he's going to have to deal with, because guys are going to go after him every time he gets in the game now.
Yeah, I thought it showed a certain lack of class during the Stephen F. Austin game when their coach actually was setting off a siren every time Makura came into the game. But super talented offensive player, and he certainly has the physical skills to improve his defense. And I think one interesting thing, and this will lead into our next take, is JP, with Edmund Sumner back in the mix, yeah, I think there's an interesting fight for some minutes there, because even though they don't necessarily play the same position, the lineups that they fit into, there's not going to be a whole lot of there may not be a whole lot of minutes for both of them. So yeah, it seems Edmund Sumner didn't look great tonight. He looked like a guy who hadn't played basketball in a long time and was super eager. But you can see the tools that he's got. He made some nice passes, got into the lane. Yeah,
it's quick.
So it's certainly not a bad thing to have two guys like that, both of whom can create their shot, both of whom are pretty good shooters. JP is obviously a better shooter than Edmund, although Edmund's better at making his own shot. And I think Edmund's most likely got a higher upside defensively. But what's the situation with Sumner? Because before we started recording, you told me something interesting that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. So obviously the big thing has been, you know, me and Snow, while the line from Xavier and what we've said, it seems like the coaching staff feels is that he's going to help this team this year and they're not planning on redshirting him. The big question was, is there still that possibility? Because things had gotten off to a good start. The offense was rolling and it's hard to figure out where the minutes for Edmund are going to come from, especially when you start getting into tighter games where you don't have as big of a rotation to play all these guys. The thing about it is this does not necessarily mean he can't redshirt. And I was thinking it did initially. I know I tweeted that out there. So my mistake on that, since he does have the medical history and that's on file and everything, and you know, he has a legitimate injury that kept him out, he actually can still file for a medical redshirt and would get one as long as he doesn't play in 30% of the games. And then there's a date in January. I think it's very early. I think it's in the first week, like the second or third or something, where he has to submit that redshirt. But it's not out of the question. So I guess theoretically, you know, if the staff wanted to test him out a little bit these first couple games, see how things went, see how the rotation felt with him in there, they could do that and then maybe still make that decision on it and just say, hey, look, his knees aren't ready to go this year and we're gonna hold him out. So I guess it's still interesting. We can still look, but judging by the fact that they played him tonight, the way he's been going in practice, my guess is they are planning on using him, and certainly he brings something a little bit different because he can shoot the ball from the outside a bit, and he has that handle and quickness to get into the lane where I think it really does add another dimension and makes them tough to guard. When you think about putting a guy like him and Remy on the court together, how are you matching up with both of their ability to get into the paint? And then you have the shooters like Trayvon and whoever else is on the court at that time. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works itself out. We've just finally started to get to that point where the rotations are starting to have some rhythm and seem to make sense at this point. Now we're adding another piece to the puzzle, so it's all going to be mixed back up here, and these next couple games over the holiday break are going to be interesting.
Yeah, no question about that. So 2014, Xavier lost to Iowa and blew a 15-point lead on Thanksgiving. 2013, Xavier lost to the University of the Pacific on Thanksgiving. The year before, I don't believe they played in an exempt tournament over the Thanksgiving holiday. But you all get the point. These early season holiday tournaments have not exactly treated the Musketeers with a great deal of they haven't led to a lot of satisfaction for the Muskies in the last few seasons. Rick, as we head into the Wooden, Xavier plays San Diego on Thursday, either UTEP or Princeton on Friday, and then, you know, potential matchup with Washington or Long Beach, a couple other teams on the other side of that bracket. How do you break down this tournament? Do you think this Xavier team is primed to go do the job away from home?
Well, I think they're certainly the most talented team in this tournament. It's one you would really hope as a Xavier fan that they're going to win. But we've seen how things work when a team goes on the road in the past couple of years. And I'm definitely not going to say it's automatic or they're a terrible team if they happen to lose a game here, because it's just the first taste of the road life, whether it be getting on the plane for the first time, feeling jet lag, sleeping in the hotels. Like it's new. It's new to these guys. They're still relying on Trayvon Blewett to be their best player in his first game away from the Cintas Center. So while I'm not really concerned about him, there's still that question. It's just different on the road. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. San Diego is not a terrible team. I don't think they can score with Xavier, but they're not bad. They'll still give them a challenge. They're sort of in that same realm as like a Murray State or probably not quite as good as Stephen F. Austin, but, you know, somewhere behind Murray State and Stephen F. Austin, not too far away from those teams.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think I think Long Beach is probably a decent comparison.
Yeah, they're more about Long Beach. You're right. I would agree with that.
I mean, they're probably San Diego. The West Coast Conference, you definitely have an upper class of that league with Gonzaga and then St. Mary's and BYU. But I think San Diego is probably the best of the rest in that league.
Yeah, they've beaten the crap out of two bad teams in Southeast Missouri State and Florida A&M. And then they lost a close one, 81-75 to Boise State, who's not bad, you know, a top 100 team, 76, according to KenPom. So they're, like we said, they're they're okay. You know, it'll be enough of a challenge that if Xavier doesn't play well in their first neutral or road game, that they're probably not going to come out with a win.
But if the Muskies are able to get away with it, they could very well go out and blow them out. They would play a semifinal game or a first round or a consolation round game on Friday, times TBA. And then the last game of this tournament, I believe, is on Sunday rather than Saturday, with the final being the last game of the day in the evening. So hopefully we'll see the Musketeers take on Washington in the final of this tournament late on Sunday night. But it'll certainly be an interesting one, and hopefully a better Thanksgiving break than the Muskies gave us as fans last season.
Yeah.
Rick, anything else from tonight's win over Murray State to discuss?
No, let me check the no more hashtags, I don't think. No, I think that's it. Dan, have a good Thanksgiving. All our listeners, have a good Thanksgiving. We'll
probably be back. I'm thinking that we probably will record a post-game podcast after the second game of the tournament on Friday. And we are tentatively thinking about a full podcast in the middle of next week between the Wooden and the Alabama game with a guest that I think will be pretty interesting. So, thanks to everybody. Musketeers go to 4-0 with the victory over Murray State at Cintas Center tonight. And happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you a little bit later this week.